Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chris Front Podcast. My name is Maya. I'm your host. And today is an extra special episode. We're calling it the Glow Up episode. And with me today is Iris Chang. Iris.
Hello.
There you are. Iris is one of the... Actually, the very first person that ever worked with me behind the scenes of Chris Front. And... Iris is also the very first person that started this podcast together with me. And if you go all the way back, you might be able to dig up the very, very first episode we recorded all the way back without proper microphones. That has changed. And today we're here to have a little chat, you know, what we've been up to and, you know, what changed and what hasn't changed, and we'll catch up and you'll get to be a part of it. With no further ado, Iris, why don't you go introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. This is crazy. We were just talking like right before we started recording about how it's probably like the last time we saw each other in person was pre-COVID. Had a near-death experience. And like the last time we talked to each other on the phone was like at least 2 years ago. So this is really fun, bringing back lots of memes.
Yeah. So, Iris, tell the audience a little bit more, kind of how we used to work together and in what ways and kind of what came out of that and sort of, yeah, what changed. And yeah, just let's do a little chronological run and we can jump back and forth and tell some fun little episodes.
Yeah, let's do it. So I guess we first started working together. I was just helping you out with some tour booking with Queers to the Front. This was just like a few months before COVID hit and none of us knew what was,
it's gonna be like 2019. Yeah, like early, no, like late 2019, something like that. Summer 2019?
Yeah, actually, you know what? Yeah, I think it was earlier. No, wait. No, so we started November, I think around November 2019, yeah. And then I had all our tours lined up through the summer. All of that didn't happen.
Oh, yeah. What a fun time that was.
Oh, yeah. Love being fun employed indefinitely.
Oh, yeah. Then 2020... And I remember having this conversation just kind of like what happens next and like what happens at all. And to be completely honest, like I had no clue what to do. Like my entire career, as did yours, just fell completely apart like in the matter of a week. And but I just kind of wanted to keep something rolling and like feel like something is still happening. And also... quite frankly, I wanted to keep you employed in whatever small way I was able to. And so, I don't know, I just did that and tried to think of something that could be worth the while for both of us. And so, we decided to do a little social media thing, and I really did not want to... Like, honestly, it didn't feel right for me in that entire year to do any promotion of anything that I do. Like, it just wasn't the year where I wanted to be of any importance, you know? Like, I was just like, I'll take a step back.
Totally.
I'll do my very own thing. And I felt more than comfortable giving over the entire Instagram account. I just gave it over to you. And pretty much told you to do kind of whatever you want. And we had like one meeting per week and I just kind of signed off on sort of whatever you came up with. And we just chatted.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. It was a good little breather from like the giant month, like several months long mental breakdown that all of us were going through,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really fun time. Yeah, and then you started doing your artist management things once we started looking up a little bit from that initial, like, holy shit, what are we all doing? And then I'm trying to think what ended up happening.
You went to school, pretty much. That is what happened. Yeah, like kind of like
Yeah.
priorities changed quite literally. Like I think I really went into just managing artists and sort of trying to have solid ground under my feet again. And you just kind of went to school, and that's sort of what happened. But I, would not do this podcast without also telling the very audience how much of a fantastic job you did, especially through that year. Like I'm actually interested to hear, because I don't think I've ever asked you that, but how did you feel sort of running an account for, in the end, a for-profit company? Not that that year had any profit, but in the year that it was, with all that it was. And I don't know, I feel like you came up with a really good balance of sort of posts sort of acknowledging the current situation and finding a good tone to in the copy and everything. But I guess how was that for you, finding a strategy and structure and bringing structure into something in a year where there was the absolute absence of, God, what a long sentence.
I mean, I guess I never really thought of it much from that angle. I mean, like when I came onto Queers to the Front, like I came on because I really loved what you were doing, and I really believed in the things that you were doing were like really helping people, and especially coming from like a festival world that is a lot more corporate. It was like a nice, good breather. I'd come from the DIY world, like many of us, and festivals kind of takes you out of that world, just by the nature of the job. And so it was like a good, nice reminder of like, this is the world that I came from. So, yeah, I mean, I honestly, during the time, like I was like, this is great. Like I was having a blast.
But how, I guess, how did you come up with like posts and strategy? And I mean, like, I know you put a lot of thought into it, and I'm just wondering, like, genuinely wondering, like, sort of what was your thought process in that time with whatever you'd pitched to me, like meetings and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't have like the clearest memory of what we were doing at the time, but I do remember it was honestly just like I would pick up like little current event stories that we heard, and you would bring those to me too, and we would kind of filter through those. I mean, it was like such a rough time where, there was so much going on in the world that like finding a balance of of like hitting everyone with like the same shitty stories over and over again, while also not, making people feel hopeless, like making people feel like, there's still something that we can do about it. And also like sprinkling it in with some just like, good positive things. So I mean, I feel like my strategy was really like in the same way of how I would want to digest any kind of media, which is, like making sure there's like a good balance of like everything, not focusing completely on the negative. And when you do focus on the negative, end it with like, this is what you could do about it, not just like, well, this world fucking sucks, which it does, but like, not leaving it on that note. Yeah, just giving people like some kind of action or some kind of like, this is what you can be
Oh yeah, we
doing.
did a lot of like just, I guess, spotlighting different charities to donate to or whatever. I think we also tried to sort of participate in sort of I don't know, like
We did like
remembering a lot of people that died, in different protests, etc., around that time. And
Yeah.
yeah.
I remember we were doing like benefit live streams too, which that was always like a nice breath of fresh air. We were also, like doing these podcasts, which I feel like gave everybody, I mean, at that point, everybody in the industry was in the same place as us, like unemployed and having a little bit of a crisis of like what's next. And I feel like that At least for me, like that was kind of helpful to feel like, other people are in the same place, and that
Yeah.
doesn't mean it's all over,
And it was for me, like we ended up, it was funny, like you pretty much ended up, like you started the podcast more or less. And I totally remember how you made me a list of how to do basic editing on a podcast and sort of what I need and stuff like that, because I was clueless. And so, you taught me a little bit about like putting like I don't know normalizing the podcast and like the audio and stuff like that, and we did the first episode together, and then I think you kind of wanted to rather be in the background a little bit, slash quite frankly you hadn't signed on to be a podcast host, I guess, which is also fair enough. So I ended up being the host, but you were the one to kind of very much help me come up with sort of topics and and we definitely chatted who we'd invite and whatever. And for me at the time, it was the like aside from the like pitch meetings that we would have, which were also more like general check-ins with each other, to be honest, and just having some sort of structure in a week, like the podcast would be the only other meeting I would have in an entire week of doing nothing else.
I know.
And I feel
Ooh.
like we both,
Sometimes I'm like, how do I bring those days back?
I mean, but yeah, I feel like we both genuinely managed to sort of uplift each other, and quite frankly, I was also very grateful that you lended your voice as a person with particularly an Asian background in, the pandemic and all the anti-Asian violence that was happening, particularly in the US. And I was incredibly grateful for you to sort of bring in your creative input, and I was so happy to have you kind of be the face of that, not sort of super directly, and not in a way where I would have ever wanted to sort of instrumentalize you in a way at all, but it was just great. We were friends already, and so one thing just kind of worked out with the other, and I think it was incredible.
No, it was awesome. Definitely was what I needed during that time. I feel like, I feel like that kind of goes for everyone.
Happy days and not so happy days, but what a time that was. It's honestly, I already feel so gloomy again, like even thinking back to that. Like oftentimes I realize I've never actually really spoken about 2020 to sort of much of anybody again. Like it just kind of like the year happened, and then I jumped into work as much as I could and just like tried to sort of never look back again, and just kind
Totally.
of,
It's like a bad fever
yeah,
dream.
kind of. Yeah, I mean, I would like to think that I and we all learned some lessons from it, or took something away from it for sure. And I sure did a lot of reading and researching and a bunch of stuff in that year, but yeah, it's wild to look back on that nowadays, and very 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 odd. Yeah, but so moving on, Iris,
On to the
on to the
next.
next. Yeah, but I guess what have you been up to? So you went to school for bachelor's in business management. You just told me you did it. You graduated. You finished.
Yes.
Congratulations. And
I was ready to get out of
yeah,
there.
and you even did all of that whilst also being a freelancer and doing a lot of event work. You do ticketing and VIP and sort of a bunch of mostly kind of major festival work, and you jet around the country a lot, and that's kind of what you do. But how is that for you, combining those, doing the bachelor's and doing all the event work, and how did you juggle that? That's crazy.
Not well. Like there were some times where, I mean, at that point I was, especially after COVID, everyone was so excited to, or I wouldn't say after COVID, but like once,
After lockdown, maybe.
like after lockdown, especially here in the US, I think everyone's seen just like how much of a rush people were trying to get back into like events. And so it was just kind of like everything exploded all at once. I went from having zero jobs for a whole year to suddenly having to turn down like five jobs a week. And yeah, so I was practically working full time, and then also having to balance like school and, getting my degree. So yeah, did not, I don't know, it was very chaotic. It was, I would like, there was a few weeks, or especially during like exam season, where I would fly in for a festival on like Thursday or Friday night, fly back home on Monday morning, and then within 2 hours, I'm like sitting in an exam room, having to answer questions about like, I don't know, the economy or whatever. And yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know, but I mean, juggling that, I feel like it wasn't as difficult as like it could have been, mostly because the path that I went was really, in some ways, aligned really easily with like festival management. I mean, it was business management, and most of that was focused on like team dynamics and working with people, and also like how to like make operations most efficient, which is like basically what running a festival is. You're
It is,
getting
yeah.
like hundreds. Yeah, it's like getting 400,000 people in one spot in one weekend, and trying to make shit not blow up. So it actually ended up, I went into school kind of thinking like this is just something that I need to check off the list and get over with. And I did kind of keep that mindset throughout most of it, but at the same time, as I started getting more and more into it, I actually don't re like I absolutely don't regret going at all. And I think, people going into music like should explore that kind of like that kind of path. It's not for everybody for sure, but I definitely think that a lot of the things that I learned really helped me a lot, especially in the whole festival management world. I can't speak for, other areas of music, but yeah, so I ended up, I mean, it was like absolutely chaotic. I was like working like anywhere up to like 80 hours a week, and then also doing school full time chaos. But I made it work and came out the other side, and yeah, it was worth it in the end.
So wild. I've nothing but respect for that. I mean, now that you have that BA and you know so much more, I guess about a lot of management things in the nearest word, but are you looking to go upwards the career ladder within the festival world? Like, I mean, not that you don't already carry a shitload of responsibility doing ticketing, doing VIP, etc., but I don't know what you see yourself kind of moving to sort of the, higher or highest tier positions within the festival world at some point.
Yeah, in some festivals, like I've been like managing their ticketing departments, or like other mostly ticketing is like the world that I've kind of found myself in, and like managing those departments, and like heading those. And I don't know what like the next 10 years will look like. As I've said before, I kind of keep an open mind to everything, and I think, if the stars align, like I think it would be really cool to to be a festival director. But
Yeah, that's kind of what I was
that's all
thinking,
stuff
yeah.
that like, yeah, and that's all, but that's, and like there's so many amazing festival directors that I've worked with. And I feel like post-COVID, there's been a shift in like festival directors towards like more women-led festivals, or just like other, just like other groups. And I've worked with a lot of amazing female festival directors, who have like really taught me a ton, and like changed the way that I work and how I think and how I like, conflicts always come up, and they've completely taught me like how to like overcome those conflicts, especially when they're with like other people, other department heads. So yeah, I mean, there's so many inspiring female festival directors out there, and that's definitely like a path that I would keep an open mind to. But I go about everything just kind of like keeping an open mind. Anything, like anything happens, especially in this industry, like you never know where you're gonna end up. So I'm always down to try anything.
That's incredible. Yeah. How does your typical day look like in festival work? I mean, obviously you work different jobs, but if you were to sort of break it down into more or less of a general kind of itinerary for the day, when do you wake up and, just sort of take us through the steps.
Yeah, sure. I mean, of course, it's different for every single festival, and you have to kind of like craft a plan for each festival just based on, like what you're dealt with. Because yeah, every single festival, you get different resources, and you have a different team. So you really have to be able to think on your feet and be able to adapt really quickly. A lot of shit just happens last minute. You're like, I always joke, like, I should put on my resume that I'm a professional firefighter. I feel like that's what I'm doing all day, is just putting out fires left and right. And I'm like, this is not, it'll be the smallest thing that I did not expect would become a problem. It has somehow, like, is somehow threatening to like completely debilitate the whole festival, So, I mean, a lot of it is just being able to be quick on your feet and be able to take problems as they come, roll with the punches. But I'd say, like, if I had to set like a general like schedule or list of things that I do, I mean, I guess I'll talk about ticketing specifically. Again, it's different for each department, but that's kind of the department that I've found myself in the most. Yeah, I mean, ticketing is one of those where sometimes we wake up the earliest and also go to sleep the latest. It is definitely, at least to me, I could be biased, but like from my point of view, it is one of the most like admin intensive fields in music, because like if you're thinking about a festival with like upwards of 100,000 people, you have to have systems in place to track where all of those tickets are going, and if you don't have those systems in place, like you're putting everyone at that festival at some level of security risk, and I think a lot of people, when they think about ticketing, they're not thinking about security. They're not thinking about, we are like the first defense of security that any kind of event sees. We're making sure that the people who are supposed to be coming into the festival are getting in, and the people who aren't and could potentially be a threat to the festival aren't getting in, And then if something does happen, which unfortunately it does, we're the ones that are, helping with investigations of like tracking that person's movement, and finding their identity. So I see it mostly as like a security job, really, which is like not what I would have ever thought when I first got into
No,
it.
that's so fair. I mean, I'm sure. I guess, and we'll get back to the original point of what does your day look like. But since you went in the direction of security, what changes have you noticed, or have you noticed changes since the Astroworld happenings? And just the other day at the Brixton Academy in London, maybe you saw that there was an incident of. I mean, it was essentially fans, that pushed into the venue and pretty much kind of destroyed the front doors. And it looks like just as of a couple of hours ago, one person has tragically died from the injuries from that, with two people more still critical. But yeah, I mean, have you noticed any change, like I guess systemic, structural changes in your industry, since or lately?
Some extent. I mean, I think with everything, festivals are unfortunately a very corporate world, which I think people on the outside don't expect, but it absolutely is. So like I mean, just with any corporation, there's only so much that we as like the individual people working there can really do. So I would absolutely love to see so many more measures. I was actually working at Astroworld. I
Oh, you
was
were.
thankfully not.
Oof.
I was working merch, and this was just like a little quick weekend job. So I like really was not like majorly involved in any of the operations at all. I was there for loadout and saw like kind of the crazy aftermath of everything. And I did have friends who were much more involved in the operations, working as like operations assistants. I think all of us, like every single person that I've worked with who was either there or, who knew people who were there, like I think we were all some level of just like traumatized by that experience, and I think the scariest part was kind of that like all the like people who aren't involved in festivals, kind of make their own theories about what happened, and there's so many different ideas floating around. But like in reality, most of the things that happen are things that happen at every single festival, and it's just like to what extent does it happen? And usually they don't happen all at once, which unfortunately, like that is what happened there. It was just like all these things came crashing down at once, and so that's like really scary. I mean, I think as far as like what I've seen festivals doing since then, just like on a site operations front, so like the people who are like setting up the structures, like the physical structures around the festival, I've seen a lot more tightening and like a lot more investment going into like buying better barricades and like double fencing in case of just instead of like single fencing. And then also like I guess on the ticketing side, I mean, I feel like ticketing, because it's such like a detail-oriented job where people like even before Astroworld, we were already tracking every single thing. So ticketing is really the front where like we've all gotten a little bit even more crazy with our tracking. And like I think like those kinds of things, like even though I'd say most of the people in ticketing that I know took those things seriously before, like it's just even further a point of like why we do kind of that kind of work. Like working more closely with like the security department and like their supervisors and heads, to really make sure like we're all on the same page here, like these are all the places where we could see some kind of crack in the system. Like we need extra hands in anywhere of those places where we think we could get hit. I mean, like I obviously like I wish there was many more extensive measures. But there are like little things that we as like individual like department heads have been like trying our best to do, but without any like real kind of like legislation or like company policy, just with any kind of giant business capitalism kind of thing, you run into some roadblocks there. But
It's
yeah.
difficult. And I mean, I guess not opposite, but a little bit on the other side of, the corporate structure that the festival is, and all the red tape there. Would you like, there's a lot of opinion kind of going around sort of in the industry, music industry, that fans have like sort of crowd behavior in general has, or like crowd etiquette has gotten worse since lockdown. And like in a lot of ways, it's very positive that a lot of newer like fans are coming into festivals, into shows. And at the same time, it seems that a lot of these kids, maybe haven't had the same kind of, like kind of got thrown into something, after a year, after 2 years of no shows at all. And I don't know, not to put this on the kids whatsoever, but I guess just overall, with all the things that sort of play into it, would you say that it's gotten harder to do crowd management sort of since, or?
Like a combination of both, you know, like ever since Astroworld, I've sat through more like crowd safety management, like workshops than I ever did before. And like also have had a lot more like, you know, what to do in an emergency meeting. But I mean, I think on the fan side, I don't know, it's hard to say. I mean, people are like so unpredictable that you just kind of have to be prepared for everything. And I think like, so I don't know, I feel like it's hard for me to say like a comparison because like, you know, for every one of these that happen, there's also like a million other events that, you know, where people are great to each other and like don't, where there isn't any kind of problem at all. But these are obviously like the ones that stick in our heads the most. I mean, I think there's some level on both sides of like we should all be doing better, you know.
Yeah, but I guess, well, back to the original question,
Yes.
what does your festival day look like? So you said you're one of the earliest ones up. So, well, let's start with your week. So you said you fly in on like the Thursday to the festival. You know, meet with the crew. I guess you have the general introduction briefing, kind of get a little site tour, and you kind of see what's happening, and you sort of arrange your mobile office and kind of whatever you do. And yeah, I guess first day would be the Friday, really. And yeah, what does that look like? When do you arrive on site? What do you start with? Take us through your day.
Well, like for something, when you're managing ticketing, our week starts way earlier than when the actual festival starts. And usually they're at least 3 days before, if
Oh, okay.
not
Fair, yeah.
like a week. I mean, just depending on the size of the festival, I know festivals where their ticketing team is out like when the first crew is out there, you know, they're there like 3 weeks before. So it
Wow.
really just depends. Yeah, I mean, it depends on what the festival is and what they need. But yeah, usually my week starts with I am looking at a shipment of like hundreds of thousands of wristbands, and I need to figure out how the fuck I'm gonna deal with all these, you know? Like I'm looking at boxes on boxes of wristbands, and like, of course, they're all like, you know, they're all mixed in. I mean, they're not like mixed in with each other in the bags, but like the boxes are not arranged in any kind of way that makes any kind of sense. So I usually spend the first like the whole first day or two just sorting through all the boxes and, you know,
Make
doing
sure everything's
inventory. I
there.
mean, yeah, and I mean, I came from merch before I fell into ticketing, and so there's a lot of similarities there on like the inventory side, you know, just, you know, figuring out what you have and figuring out a way to deal with all of it. So yeah, that's kind of like the first thing that happens. And then the next thing is usually like getting all of your like actual physical needs set up. So if I'm at a festival and it's like, okay, we're now a day or two before the festival starts, I have X amount of box offices, X amount of credential offices. You know, what do I need for those? And, you know, if hopefully you weren't in too much of a cram before you got onto site, you would have told whoever the site operations team is what you actually did need, you know, tell them like, you know, the X amount of tables, X amount of chairs, signage, all of those kinds of things. But that's kind of the time when I start looking at, okay, what are all the actual physical things that I need and start getting all of those into place. And you know, sometimes during this time, I'm also doing like staff credentials. So not only does everybody who is coming to the festival need a ticket, everybody who is working the festival also needs some
Also,
kind of thing that
artists,
shows that.
yeah.
Yeah, artists, press, pretty much anybody. Yeah, everybody who is literally standing on the property needs to have some kind of thing. So you know, some festivals I'm dealing with that as well, like a day or two before the festival. Other ones, that's kind of something that gets mixed in with all the regular box office operations. And then, yeah, and then once it's festival day, we get all the staff there and we're up and going. Usually the first day is like a little bit of madness. I mean, even with festivals that you've done before in previous years, every single year is different. There's nothing that stays 100% the same. So kind of spend the whole first day like putting out fires of like, just the things that pop up that were just like, no one could have planned for this. No one knew that this was happening. And yeah, I'd really say festival days are a lot of problem solving. And on like just like the ticketing staff side, like for the box office workers, it's a lot of customer service. These are really long days. You're probably on your feet. I try to like I my thing as like a ticketing manager is I want to make sure all of my people are comfortable. I want to make sure they're sitting down. I want to make sure they have food and water and bathroom breaks and that they're having time to go see their favorite sets. I want to make sure that they're not in the sun because sometimes you're out all day. So, but like even with that, like there's so much running around, even as like a regular staff, that it can't like it's hard to find time to be able to sit down and take time for yourself. So you have to really be able to do these like long days on your feet, talking to customers for like 12 hours plus straight. And yeah, there's like, we try our best to like really make sure everyone's comfortable. But yeah, so dealing with a lot of customers, a lot of time at your computer, processing all the tickets. I mean, that's pretty much what like a regular box office worker is doing during the day. And like I'm there to I always say like I'm there to support them, like they're the ones actually on the ground doing everything. Like I'm there to make sure that they have everything that they need to do their jobs. Any kind of issues that come up, like I every time during a training, I always tell everybody on my team, I'm like, you're not getting paid enough to deal with annoying people. Like you're getting paid to process tickets and put on a smile. If anybody is giving you any kind of shit, like send them my way. Like I'm getting paid to pay to play bad cop. You're not, so really that's what the whole first day is, just figuring out whatever people have problems about and
Wow,
figuring out what to do
that is
about them.
so much. Honestly, like, as somebody that, like, I will usually be, the tour manager, very stressed, having gotten barely half the information that I need for the festival. On probably 3 hours of sleep, arriving in your ticketing office, and somehow needing to figure out my entire crew from you. I feel like I just learned so much that I didn't know about your job. I mean, I can kind of from like tour management is like in the end managing events in whatever ways, it there's similarities everywhere, and like I think I kind of knew some parts of your job, but I never realized how early you would be on site already, and like how much sense that makes in terms of tracking people down and stuff like that. There's a major friggin' operation, and it definitely makes me think that. And I swear I've always been as nice as I could humanly be to anybody working any festival in any venue, but yeah, like this makes me appreciate it even more. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on the other side too, and like sometimes it can be really frustrating, especially with like how big some of these festivals are and how much of a crunch that they put on their teams, that like the things that you need to have in place like just aren't in place. And also on the side of like the contractors, some of us are, 1 week hopping from one festival to the next, and you're having to advance all of these festivals at the
Whilst,
same time. And
that's
yeah, while also running around for like 12 hours straight. 12, I mean, even more at that point, you're probably doing like 16 to 18 hours. And so like, yeah, things fall through the cracks all the time. And I totally get it when like people come up to us and they're like pissed off. 'Cause I'm like, yeah, I'm pissed off too right now. But yeah, I mean, it's really just a lot of like, it really the I always call whenever people ask me, like, what do you do for work? I'm like, I just babysit drunk people.
So you kind of set me up to ask that question. Being the ticketing manager, you seem to be like to be doing such a great job, taking care of all the people, working for you, and like from the very hiring process to, on-site work. But I think the very interesting question here is, when do you take care of yourself, and how do you do that?
Yeah, that is what I'm not so hot at, which is a big lesson that I learned this year. Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that I've learned this year is find people who can support you that are like other department heads. If they're usually you're not working in a box all by yourself. Usually there's other department heads around you. Like find someone that you who you're comfortable with to be like your accountability partner. And this goes like not just in the festival world, but also like everywhere else. Have both of you set timers on your phone and be like, here's our food timer, here's a once an hour water timer, and here's a like every 2 hours break timer. Because I am absolutely the kind of person who, when I get stressed out, I just go like 10 hours straight without eating, drinking, or
100%.
taking even a second of a break.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's
Exactly
so
same.
easy in this world too when you're,
Especially
yeah,
when
it's
you're in the
so easy
management
when
role.
there's
Yeah.
like,
It's like everybody comes to you and the problems
totally.
just don't stop, and you just run, 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 and somehow you do the greatest job at making sure everybody else is so comfortable. But have you had a sip of water in 10 hours? Probably not.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the thing is, like everybody else in that office is probably in the same exact boat as you, in the production office. So like if you like I what really works for me is like having somebody else there to, be the one to be like, hey, have you eaten? Like go leave and eat, So now it's not like I am like now it's not me like feeling bad for stepping away for eating. It's like this person is coming to me and they're telling me that the problem that they're facing is that I'm not eating, in a way
So
of
you're like,
like
okay,
kind of made
must
it
solve
into like,
the
yeah, exactly. So like, oh shoot, this is a problem that I have to solve, or like sometimes we'll like figure out systems of like, okay, you're busier in the morning. I'm gonna be the one that gets both of us food in the morning and brings food back to you. I'm busier at night. So now you're the one who's getting both of us food and bringing it back, just finding out ways that you can really work with the people around you. It is such a like collaborative like community environment that you just got to rely on the people around you. I think something else is just that like I don't know, it's like a change in mindset of like is everything really that urgent that if you don't deal with this in the next 5 minutes the whole festival is going to come down. And like 99.9% of the time, the answer is no. Everything feels like such a bigger problem when you're like in the spot, you're sleep deprived, you haven't eaten, like everything seems like it's like gonna tear the whole world down. And I've really been trying to like force myself to like take a step back and be like, is this the biggest problem in the world right now? No, I can go take a 5 minute break, So I think it's just like, learning how to think about yourself too. Like think about yourself as also one of the tasks on your to-do list. One thing that really helped for me was like, I would literally write down my personal basic needs things onto my to-do list. Like if you like there's this one festival where I literally had on my to-do like on my calendar, like I had all the things I needed to do at each time scheduled out, and one of them was go take a shower. And I had to like say over the radio, I'm like, I am taking a 20-minute shower break. If anybody needs me, tell them to come back in 20 minutes.
That is so good. I mean, who knows? Well, do you have you how do you do God, all right, let me rephrase that. Do you do any stretching or anything? Like how and I'm not just asking that from like a how do you take care of yourself perspective, but actually also like from a very like security and like health and safety perspective, because Here's why I'm asking that. I very randomly have gotten very into Formula One of all things. And one thing that I really like is and particularly the Aston Martin team randomly, but one thing that I really like is they have these, documentaries about crew and their days and whatever. And they have mandatory like 15-minute, 20-minute, whatever warm-ups before every race and every training, like in the garage. And they'll have these sort of like mandatory just warm-up stretches and like sort of reflex kind of warm-ups and stuff. And they talk a lot about how that's not just for fun, but actual injury prevention. And like a health and safety thing and a duty of care from the employer, but also a duty of care everybody to everybody else, And I ever since I kind of learned how, for example, Formula One seems so much better that I've been thinking why that is not much more of a thing in the music industry. Why can't we do that as well? So I was wondering if, I guess, you've seen anything like that around in your world.
Yeah, I mean, not really in a way that it's like a structured thing that, like on like a systemic level, people are, being encouraged to do these kinds of things. I mean, I think everybody at some point or another in their career learns that, you got to take care of yourself so that you can take care of everything else in the long term. But yeah, I mean, not really. I like the closest thing I can think of for me is my break, sometimes I'll just like go and ride in my golf cart and go a few circles around the festival. So in that way, I'm like, it still looks like I'm like going somewhere. Like if someone's like, oh, I have a problem for her, I still look like I'm like doing something and like I'm zipping around to go somewhere. But really, it's just for me to like, go outside, get some fresh air, get a little bit of a breather. Another thing that I like to do, which I had a friend teach me at another festival recently, was just like laying on the ground with like your butt against the wall and putting your feet up on the wall. Game
Gets the
changer.
blood in
And
the
also
brain.
the best part, yeah, and also the best part is that like if you find a good enough corner, even if you're in the same room, people who are walking into the room can't see you in the corner on the floor. So there were so many times where I was just like, taking a like 5, 10 minute break laying on the ground. And like people like came in looking for me and they thought I wasn't in there and they're like left and then came back 20 minutes later. I'm like, great. Like,
Amazing.
yeah.
That is.
And then like, and yeah. And I mean, I was in the room. They could have asked me anything, if it was really that urgent, but obviously they didn't need me right at that second. So, yeah, or like even just like another thing I like to do is, just close my eyes for 10 minutes, even if I'm not going to sleep. I'm a big fan of power naps. I will take a 15-minute nap
Me,
anywhere.
in a nutshell,
Oh
100% power naps,
yeah, the
the
amount of
yeah.
times I have, yeah, the amount of times I have fallen asleep like in the middle of a pit
Yeah,
at a festival,
legit.
like yeah, I'll just knock out for 15, 20 minutes. But like even that, like sometimes, you're so amped up that you just can't get yourself to fall asleep and take that quick little nap. So I'll just like close my eyes and something about like, that's like one less sense that your brain has to like take
Yeah,
energy to
very.
process. Yeah, so doing those kinds of things, like really just, yeah, that's really like my tips for just ways to like step away from things. I'm absolutely not the best at that. I'm terrible at it. I could say I've probably done those things like less than like I could probably count all the times I've done those things like on one hand.
Yeah, I feel that, but I mean, I keep asking a lot of people that lately because again, seeing how other industries with, very much the same people and the same jobs in the end seem to be doing that much better, and it's just like how, and like really seeing from a health and safety and injury prevention standpoint, because yeah, like if I think about it, how
Totally.
many, like after this summer of doing full tours back to back, TMing, I ended up having pretty bad hip issues that still haven't really gotten too much better on both sides, actually, annoyingly. And it surely has a lot to
Oh,
do with the
no.
fact that I'd not once did any proper stretching. And I feel like had I done even the slightest bit of injury prevention, that would have been so different, you know? And you still do a lot of loading every day. You lift so many boxes and abs and whatever you do, you know? And it's just, yeah, I mean, we'll see how many of my promises I'll keep next year, but I genuinely intend to do better, and especially when I'm in any kind of managing position, I do want to more or less make it a thing for the travel party. Like maybe I'll not make
Totally.
it a rule,
Yeah, and
but
it's
at the very
also.
least I'll make it a thing where it's like I will be there every morning at this time, and you can join or you cannot join, but it would be great if you did type thing.
Yeah, right. It's such a good example for everyone. And well, one thing I have been really good at doing this year is I went into this this was one of my New Year's resolutions or whatever you want to call them. I was just like, I'm gonna have 1 week off every single month. Like last year, I was just going back to back to back for I think I did like 9 weeks straight without a single break. And I was like by week five, I was like a shell of a human. And so yeah, that was one of the things going into this year. I was like, I don't care how good the gig is, I need to make sure I have 1 weekend off every single month. And that's really helped me a lot, just having like a week where I can go home and like breathe, you know, and like, I mean, yeah, I've got advanced work to do, and I've also like, and I probably have some like meetings that I need to sit into, but I'm like not in panic mode all the time, you know, I have time to, you know, go see my friends and do other things in life that aren't just my job. And I think that has really helped.
Yeah, and I feel like in managing positions, you as a job are such a people pleaser, and you have to be, you know, like you say it yourself, you sort of, you know, you're more or less paid to solve problems and keep a smile and keep everybody else happy, you know, and especially when you're under a lot of pressure, monetary pressure, especially that is time pressure, and especially if the people around you maybe, you know, maybe are not the easiest to work with, which, you know, happens all the time. Then I feel like that kind of people pleasing job has an almost like, I don't know, like depersonalizing effect on me. You know what I mean? Like I something that I try to do throughout managing jobs is tour jobs, whatever, is really taking a second back, like especially when somebody says something really shit to me or a big problem happened and everybody else made it my problem or I fucked something up and I made it everybody else's problem or whatever negative thing kind of happened. I sort of try to take a second and just consciously remind myself that I exist as a human outside of my job, even though my job feels like the world in that moment. And like as if my existence was tied into that in that moment, but it is not. And so I consciously take a step back and I go like, when I go home, I exist as a human when nobody cares about my tour or my artist or whatever. Like, you know, like they just go back to being little figures inside my computer, and that's where they belong. But just kidding. But no, when I go
I think
home, you
that
know,
too.
I will be a child to parents, and I'll be a sibling to siblings, and I'll be all of these things, you know. And I think consciously reminding myself that, you know, my personality does not lose value just because work isn't going great. Seems like such an easy thing to think, but in those kind of jobs where you're on site, you're traveling, you're doing these long, long hour days with not enough food, not enough water, in the heat and the cold, everything, it's very easy to lose that sense of personality, you know?
No, it totally does. I mean, like, I've had gigs where, you know, just for like hours upon hours, I'm being yelled at by angry customers. You know, somebody bought a counterfeit ticket and and flew all the way from Australia and now has no idea what to do because it's a sold out show. And like that person's obviously like the one thing I realized is because I'm like, I've done a lot of retail. Why do I feel like I never had this level of people before? Like obviously I got shit at retail too, but it was like, you know, people come yell at you for like 5 minutes and then leave. But you know, people here, they spend a lot of money and they just
Different
like
level,
sometimes they have nowhere else to go. Yeah. And then so then it's like now this person's standing in front of you for an hour and there's someone behind them waiting to yell at you too. And like in those and then when you've got also other problems that aren't customer problems, they're like, you know, logistical
Oh, yeah.
problems coming from all ends. Like, yeah, it can be really like it can like you can kind of feel just like not yourself, you know. And like I've had, I think all of us have had moments on site where, you know, we just kind of blow up. Like there's so much happening that, and you're so sleep deprived, you know, you're running on like 3 hours of sleep that for like the last week that there's just no way that you can like take all of that at once. And yeah, I mean, just learning how to step back and, you know, learning how to breathe and, you know, really, really take a step back. 'Cause I think it helps
It
everybody when
does.
you can like take a step back from the problem and actually think and actually take care of yourself. It just makes everything flow a lot
Yeah,
better.
like something like an approach that I've also thought of very interesting sort of in the last years. So I think, as you know, I actually weirdly have a science background. despite working this and, this being my career, but over the last years, I've really learned to see sort of, I guess, like psychological well-being and just sort of general awareness for my surroundings on site and my stress tolerance and resilience and all of those things. I've tried to see those things a lot more as, in the end, just complex chemical setups, like all of these emotions that I would feel towards the angry customer or the angry artist or whatever, whoever's angry at me right now, even if it's just myself angry at myself or whatever. I see these things as in the end just, emotion, chemical responses that come and go, and there is a chance to manipulate the biochemistry of a response to a situation, to a stress stimulus when you break it down, and interestingly, a lot of these techniques are also used in like more psychiatric mental health kind of backgrounds and like self-harm prevention and stuff like that, and that's where I got a lot of those ideas from. But very basic things like, at a festival in the summer, it would be easy enough to have a little maybe a little cooler with some ice in it. And one of the easiest things you can do, is like one of the easiest biochemical parts of your body that you can manipulate, is the temperature. And just holding some ice in your hands can help so much. And like hold it until it hurts, and hold it somewhat longer. Like from a little bit of ice, you're not really gonna burn your hands badly. Like it's not gonna be, it's not gonna be an issue. And just holding that for a while, until there's sort of a pain response from it, that pain response will override the chemical and neuro response to the stress that you're having in that moment. And doing that for a while will chemically take you out of that situation.
Okay, I need to try that then.
Literally, yeah. And it's actually, a self-harm tool as well, where you still get sort of that release and relief from pain, but you don't actually hurt yourself, and yeah, you can also put like some ice in your mouth, for example, because that's a huge part of where temperature regulation happens. Obviously, putting ice on the neck, because the head is a huge part. Putting your feet in ice can be wildly helpful, like all extremities basically. Another thing is the breath. Is a huge biochemical part of, what is happening. And manipulating that, same thing. You're not really gonna hurt yourself at all there. But by, simply Holding your breath for a little while, and then go, and then sort and like taking your body out of it, you know, until it gets uncomfortable, and then some more. Your brain will go for I need oxygen, but it overwrites sort of the neuro response to the stress, and then after that, you like with that, you kind of reset your cycle, from then you can sort of take 5 minutes to consciously, you know, slow down your heart. Like you can slow down your heart rate by how you breathe and not breathe and manipulate those things. And all of that will override the stress response that you have. And doing that for even 5, 10 minutes is a major game changer. And you know, you can combine those things in whatever way, and or you can hold your face in cold water, you know, combining those, for example. And all of those are incredible. And I wish I could say that I've used them more often in the actual situation, but I am aiming to do it more. And I've definitely done like the breathing, breath holding type stuff in stress situations this year, and it's been incredible. So I think that is a massive thing.
Yeah, that's good to know. Yeah, I mean, that makes so much sense when you say that. That like, yeah, these are all just like silly little chemicals floating around in our heads. I feel like that really like, I don't know, something about that seems like really relieving.
It
Like it kind of
is.
like it takes it outside of this kind of like innate problem with yourself and just makes it into like this is an external like I mean not external, but you know what I mean? Like this is like a problem that I can solve like any other problem that I would run into at work, you know?
Exactly. And in the end, you know, when you try to regulate other people's stress responses, pretty much all you're also doing is, when you really think about it, like trying to calm an angry customer down, is it really that different? Like you are trying to, you know, speak kindly to them and like stay calm, and you
Yeah,
know that if your body
totally.
language is relaxed, their body language will relax, and those kind of things. And in the end,
Yeah.
you are
So
helping
just
them
view
to.
myself as the angry
You
customer.
should, you know what you should have? You should have like a pot of ice next to you, and you just go like, hold some ice, step to the side, good sir, and then we'll talk. Yeah, mate.
Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna try that next time.
Anyways, here's a very important question. What is in your pelly?
Ooh, I mean, number one, lots of gaff tape. Like that's just like a no-brainer for anybody. I like ones where like I have like little like organizer like pull out drawers and stuff, you know, just I mean lots of like office supplies, those kinds of
Wait,
things.
how
Of
do
course, zip
organized
ties.
drawers look like? Like fold
Usual.
up drawers, or how does that look like?
Or like just like just the kinds where you I maybe this isn't so much like in a Pelly but more like a road case.
Do you have a production road case or?
It depends on like what they give me at every festival, you know, like some of them I get because I don't have any like on my own, so it really depends on like what they've got at the festival, and like I kind of just make it work with whatever they give me, you know. I request things ahead of time, but there's only so much that I get. But I mean, like in the ticketing world, the number one thing is like something to organize your shit. So I usually just have like storage upon storage things.
But do you have a Pelly that
And
you
like
fly with
obviously,
yourself with like your most important kind of things?
no, I
Oh,
don't.
interesting.
I just like request everything ahead of time and they supply all of whatever supplies that I need. I mean, in the ticketing world, there's not anything like so specialized that like you know, like I would have to bring it on my own. Like ones that are more like labor intensive, like side ops, like you know, a lot of those guys come with their own like tools and stuff. But in my world, I mean, most of it is like the basic like production stuff, like gaff tapes, zip ties,
Printer.
Sharpies, and yeah, printer for sure. Laminator. Laminator
Oh,
is always a
yeah.
big one that I always forget. So yeah, just my list is always really basic.
Yeah, fair.
Oh, Ziploc bags, actually. Ziploc bags is
Ooh.
one that I always forget,
Every
but
tour that I go and I realize at the airport that I forgot to buy them again.
I know. I'm so specific about my Ziploc bags too. I specifically like the packs of 2 gallon Ziploc bags.
Wait, are those the ones that you can bring on the plane as well? Like, coincidentally? Or are they bigger?
No, they're bigger. Yeah, but I mean, like with ticketing, I like to bundle all my wristbands in bundles of 100, and I found the 2 gallon size bag,
Oh, you put them in
like
Ziploc
perfectly
bags.
fits 100.
Oh, no way. That is so smart. I guess what I've done with merch is I'll have a bunch of rubber bands and like bundle like 10 shirts in a little bundle, for example.
So actually sometimes I'll do that with wristbands once I've broken them out of the bundles of 100, but you know, when they're still untouched, I put them in these bundles of 100 inside the Ziploc bags, and then I'll put all of the ones in the same wristband in just like one of those like regular like giant storage bins. But yeah.
So smart. I love this. That is really, really cool.
Yeah, and I'll package like 10 to 25 like bundles that have already been broken out. I'll just wrap them in gaff tape. Like I'll like loop them like in rings around my finger and just put a roll of gaff tape around
Wow. I am learning so much today. Dang.
it. Yeah, it's kind of funny how much like I feel like merch and ticketing, even though they're like pretty like what you're actually like the purpose of your job is pretty different. I feel like there's a lot of similarities in what you're actually doing,
Oh, for
like all
sure.
the inventory and like tracking and the spreadsheets upon spreadsheets.
No, for sure. So we are kind of getting towards the end of this little episode already. Already chat for an hour flew by like nothing, and I'm loving
I
it. I'm
know.
loving it. But here's well, already the last question for today. What would you say to your younger self? I mean, funny enough that you're still so freaking young. But and you've achieved so much. It's incredible. But yeah, what would you say to yourself, back when you were just starting out in the industry, to the incredible jobs that you're doing now and running shit at major festivals, and holding a BA in business management and officially being that business person. What would you say, what would you say to that younger self?
I think the biggest piece of advice is, or okay, two things. One, like know your worth. Don't let people lowball you. You know, even if you're coming in with zero experience, your time is still time. And also when you're lowballing, it's so easy. And that's how I've gotten in so many of the like bad situations I have, is that I was like, well, I want to take this for the experience. If someone's lowballing you, that means there's probably more going on in the back end that they're also cheaping out on, and you're just gonna have a shitty time, you know? And it's also like if you're lowballing yourself, you're lowballing all the other people who are looking for the same roles as you. Because that's telling these like large companies that, you know, people are gonna take that kind of shit. Yeah, I mean, but like really most importantly, it's like your time is time, you know. If somebody is willing to pay a higher price, that means they're valuing you and your time. And if they're not, that shows that they aren't valuing you as an actual person who needs to pay bills and who has shit to do. And those just aren't the kinds of people that you want to be working for long term. It's really hard. I always thought like, oh, like if I get this gig, it'll like make it easier for me to get other gigs. But the fact of the matter is that it's really hard to go from lowball prices to actual real prices, because nobody is happy when you tell them like, I'm doubling the price that you used to pay me, you know? So it just makes your job harder in the immediate way of like, now I've got the shit job where I don't have any of the resources that I need. And also in the long-term way of like, I need to move up in my career, and it's a hard conversation to break with anybody. So yeah, knowing your worth. And then the second would just be like, nothing is ever that serious. Like I think a lot of times, especially when I was younger, like any small problem, like I would just think it was like the end of the world. And that's so much of what this conversation has been about too. But like my mom works in an ICU. Like when people at her job fuck up, you know, like people's lives are on the line. If I fuck up, like the worst that happens is like, okay, someone got a free wristband. Like, you know what I mean? Or like worst case that happens is that somebody has to wait an extra 20 minutes, you know? And I think a lot of people in this industry, especially, it's, I mean, it's such a fast-moving, competitive industry. And like, you know, we came into this industry because we love music, we love people, and we love seeing the faces of people who come to these events. You know, like they're, it's a lot more personal kind of job than many other industries are. You know, like we are personally invested in it. And so it's so easy to like get wrapped up and like think that every like everything is super important, but like really nothing is ever that serious. Take time for yourself, take time to understand other people as well. If something is going wrong, like you know, just stop and, you know, stop and really give yourself a moment to breathe and then get to work, you know? Yeah. I mean, those are really, I think, like the two biggest pieces of advice that I just have to keep learning over and over again, you know?
Iris, this is wonderful advice and so important. Appreciate your time, and this was a really, really cool conversation. And thank you for being the very first guest to be on the podcast
Adding that to my resume.
twice.
Under achievements.
All right. Folks, this has been it today. Give it up for Iris Chang, and yeah. Check back in next week, and that's what we do. My name is Maya. Over and out.
Bye.